So you're saying this book, the new version, is good?
Yeah, it's smaller than this one. Meaning it's the same material, but they did it in, you know,
smaller
thinner format. Print and smaller words. Small words. But so it's a little easier, a little more user friendly. But it's the same style. I mean, the style is very involved. So the first part is very, is basically the summary section, which is if you want to just know the bottom line, that's helpful. If you want to know some of the background behind it, some of which we've covered here, some of which we haven't. So the whole rest of the book is about is that. Mm-hmm. There's other books also. Again, we mentioned Katif Shvi'id in Hebrew. If you're up for it, it's like orange greenish on the cover. Put up on the Chonotar of Aretz. That's more bottom line. Tells you what to do with footnotes on the bottom. Katif Shvi'id. It's very long. They have a lot of discussions about real fields there, not just gardening. And this book is more for the for us.
For the hunt. Okay.
The Katif Shvi'id is for a combination of regular people and also for real farmers that are making growing real things. So they have all these these types of growing of using this and that of things that I don't even know what they are. And there's a few others. This one is also good. This is again, I think I missed the last time. This is also much more bottom line here. But in terms of certain issues of food consumption, he's more on the Haredi side in terms of his Piske Halacha. So he's not in favor of, let's say, Heter Mechira or stuff like that. He's more in terms of getting non-Jewish produce and stuff like that. Other things also, he doesn't quite have all the more Datiwumi Piske Halacha. Some of the stuff, the garden stuff, is more or less the same. I mean, for that, you'll find it's pretty much, for these different books, there's different opinions, but they more or less, each book will have more or less different opinions that we'll mention some of them also. So that's good. There's more books out there. There's plenty of books. Okay. So I thought this time we'll talk a little bit about weeding in the garden and watering. Daniel told me last week, he said that he spoke a little bit about mowing the lawn and cutting bushes. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, fine. So he spoke about that. So we'll just do a little bit about weeding and watering this week, and then next week we'll try to get to everything else that we didn't get to this week. All right. So the first thing is, I don't know if Daniel mentioned this, but just to understand the background for when we look at Shemitah, we talk about gardening. So we know in the Torah that you're not allowed to plant. You're not allowed to plant during the Shemitah year. Okay? Planting is forbidden. Now, what they speak about is that obviously, if you don't do anything for the entire year, you don't plant, you don't take care of your garden, you don't water, you don't prune, you don't do anything for trees, for vegetables, for garden, whatever, so that you're not going to be left with very much afterwards. Okay, everything's going to dry up. That's going to be a big problem. So the question is, did the Torah and the Chazal really have in mind that you can't do one single thing during the Shemitah year whatsoever, you just have to leave it for the whole year? So the answer is no, that's not the case. The case is that what the Torah and the way the Chazal understood it had in mind is that for many of the melachas that are involved, there are certain leniencies. Okay, and again, probably Rav Daniel already mentioned this. Leniencies. Kulots. So it's like this. Okay, so the Torah mentions, basically four different types of things that are forbidden according to on the Doreis level, the biblical level. If you remember what they are, so we have planting, which is Zorea, planting seeds. Notea, which is planting a tree, also might be included according to many. Plowing, Horesh, according to some, is a problem on a Torah level. Harvesting of different forms, kotzer and botzer, depending on which fruit you're talking about, grapes and olives and other fruits. Okay, harvesting, you cannot harvest in the normal manner. I think Rav Daniel spoke about that also, did he? Cutting fruit during the Shemitah year for yourself and making it hefker, he spoke about that, right? Okay, so we're not going to go into that now. Those are all...
So a project ban and harvesting and...
Planting, what do we say? Planting, plowing, possibly, and harvesting. Again, there's different forms of planting and harvesting, depending on what type of fruit you're talking about. But those things are mainly the Doraisa Malachas. Everything else is pretty much rabbinic. Everything else is Drabbanan. Okay, that includes any other thing that you might do to your field. What you're thinking of is Zomer, pruning. Zemira, okay, no relation to my wife. But pruning, certain kinds of pruning trees also might be a biblical Malacha. So again, that also, we're not going to get to that part now, but that's a question how that applies to other things. I mean, pruning usually you do for vines, or for grapes. That's the main type of fruit they use. It's for other things also, but
yes,
again, what they, He spoke about it. Okay, fine, fine. So he spoke about that, and maybe pruning is unique to grapes. So you weren't there. Okay, fine.
I didn't realize that.
Okay.
For some reason, I didn't see it.
Did I miss it? Really? I thought I put it on the groups and on the email.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But last Sunday, it was when my parents moved to.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay. Okay.
Wasn't focused.
So fine. Whatever it is, those are the Torah malachos. Everything else is rabbinic, is derabbanan. Now, the last time I checked, you still have to keep derabbanans as well. Okay, rabbinic prohibitions are still prohibitions. Okay, nobody's saying that rabbinic prohibitions are permissible. However, when it comes to Shemitah, interestingly enough, so Chazal basically decided, they said, that rabbinic prohibitions when it comes to Shemitah have built-in leniencies. I mean, there are certain cases which the rabbis built into the system are going to be permissible. How does that work? Meaning, what is the difference between what's permissible and what's forbidden? So essentially, the way that the Gemara describes it, the Gemara has, like, you know, let's say 20 different actions which are rabbinically forbidden. I don't think I want to go through all of them, but if you want to just give you an idea here, they're in the Mishnah, they're in the Gemara, in the Rambam, and a lot of them are not really relevant to private gardens, which is why I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but some of them they talk about are grafting, harkava, there are examples they give here, of a bunch of other ones that I can't even explain. They talk about gizum, which is removing branches to make the tree grow better. Idur. So it's a little different than pruning when it's not talking about a grapevine. Again, we're not going to go into the details now. You don't have to, you know, you can write these, but it's not so relevant for the rest of us. Something which is called ma'avkin, which is dusting roots. Okay, roots that are exposed, you put dust on them to cover them up. Again, not so relevant for us. The carcinin is prune, sorry, we mentioned that already. Other kinds of removing trees, again, which we're not going to go into the details now, but there's a bunch of different cases of removing, sorry, not removing trees, removing branches in order to do whatever you can to the tree. Those are all, you know, derabanan malachas. There are a lot of other ones as well. Some of the other ones we will talk about, so I'll just tell you some of them, what they are now. So watering is one we mentioned before, hashkaya. Okay, that we'll get to hopefully tonight. Weeding, is there's a few different types of weeds which we'll get to. Another interesting one is me'ashnim, which is a fumigation, okay, meaning killing pests, killing bugs in a tree by fumigating it. That's another interesting one. Misaklin is removing stones from a field, which is interesting because usually it's normally done for agricultural purposes, but in a private garden, it may not be agricultural. You just want your garden to look nice. If you take away, you know, stray branches, you know, wood or rocks or stuff like that, or even cleaning up, you know, garbage, you know, there's a question, is that included in the rabbinic malacha of misaklin, of taking stones from the fields? So that's going to be a question. I don't think we're going to get to it tonight. But again, these are all questions which come up that are considered malachas, and the question is, how does it apply to a private garden? So the first point, this is where we'll focus a little more on tonight, is the following, that the cases that these prohibitions are forbidden are mainly when it's done in order to help the field grow better, and grow more, enhance the growth. That's really the main prohibition. Okay, meaning anything that we're going to talk about is generally more of a problem when it's done specifically in order to cause whatever it is, the tree or the grass or whatever, to grow better. If it's only done to preserve, okay, you're only doing it to keep whatever you're talking about, the fruit or the tree or the grass, the way that it is, meaning to not let it die out, so that's usually going to be permissible. Again, we'll have to see exactly how much is permissible, maybe not completely, but the point is anything which is only done lo kume, the Gemara says, lo kume is lahakim, meaning to retain it, to keep it in the form that it is now, so that's generally going to be permitted. Okay, why? Because Chazal understood that the point of Shemitah is to not make things grow, but it's not to cause your garden or your trees to die out. Okay, that's not what we had in mind, to make your trees or your plants die. That's not the point. So based on that, that's going to determine a lot of the practical bottom line that we have about some of these malachas in terms of what's going to be permissible and what's not going to be permissible. Okay, again, anything which is intended to enhance the growth, make it grow more, is going to be more problematic. Anything which is simply going to preserve what's already there and make it, you know, usable, that's going to be, often is going to be permitted. Okay, that's the general rule. Again, there's obviously a lot of details we're not going to go into, but that's the general rule. And as we go through some of these malachas tonight and next week, we'll see in some cases how that plays itself out, in some cases how maybe it's a little different than the regular rule. Okay, is the principle understood? Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. So let's talk about weeding. All right, what is weeding? So essentially weeding. There's a few different malachas actually in the sources that they talk about, which might relate to weeding. I'll tell you what they are, and then we'll see how they apply practically. So I can put it here. There we go. Okay. So one is called nikush.
Can you take out a plant if you don't want?
Maybe. Okay. We'll have to see. Yeah. So that's why the answer is maybe. Okay, we'll have to see what the story is. Okay. So nikush, okay, there's two types of weeding. Right? One is nikush and one is kisuach. Right? What do these mean? So we'll go through each one. Alright. Nikush weeding basically refers to weeding where you take out the roots. Alright? So if you take out the roots, the idea is that might be similar to either planting, to zorea, or plow, which is chorish. Okay, why is that? Because anytime you take out the weed by its roots, so that has a lot of similarities to either planting, because it causes the plants nearby to be able to grow better, grow more, or because of chorish, because it prepares the ground for plowing. I mean, it's not actual plowing, but pulling out the weeds helps prepare the ground for plowing that you might want to do afterwards. Okay, that's a machloket in the Rishonim, whichever, you know, which one it is. But either way, the point is that pulling out weeds by their roots, nikush, is forbidden during Shemitah. Okay, that's case number one. What's case number two? We'll come back to that in just a minute. We'll tell you what they are. Case number two is kisuach. Okay, kisuach is cutting weeds, but in a different way. Okay, kisuach is cutting weeds not by removing them by their roots, meaning uprooting them from the ground, but rather basically cutting the weeds from the top. Okay, he's got a picture here.
Then you
stimulate
wheat growth, and you
have
extra wheat growth.
So hold on, right? So I don't
and
know if we're
going to do it. You should just right. Throw the leaves in there.
So we'll get to that. Can we get to more practical points? If you want to see the picture here, it's hard to tell, but Rav Rimon in his book does have two pictures here of the two types of weedings. This is the weeding cutting the roots. You see, we use it like a hoe type of thing here. I'll send it around in a second.
Just pull it out.
So again, if you pull the whole thing with the roots, it would probably be the same thing. Okay, maybe it'd be a slightly, you know, abnormal method of doing it, but the bottom line is that it'd probably be the same thing. Weeding like this, he just pulled it out with his hands.
Yeah.
See, but that's in this case, he did it without cutting the roots. And again, I'm not an expert gardener. I'm not even a non-expert gardener.
See, but sometimes when you do that, depending on what's
the question is, how much comes out? Yeah, how much comes out?
Depends how much they've grown. If they're not very entrenched.
So that you can pull out the whole thing with the roots. Okay.
Just like that, and the
right.
Root comes out as well.
Right. So I think that even if you right, so I think even if you cut it out, if you pull it out with the roots, even with your hand, it's going to be a problem, and that's going to be the same thing. So again, the bottom line is like this. Okay, both of these are prohibited during Shemitah. I mean, you cannot do nikush or kisuach, either pulling out the weeds with the roots or without the roots. Either way is prohibited during Shemitah. However, again, as we said before, there may be certain situations where maybe it's permissible. When will that be? It's going to be in situations where...
Okay, the garden is so overrun.
Right, okay. Well, okay, so first you got to talk to your gardener. But let's say a gardener puts the blame on you and says, I have no time for it, you take care of it. You say, okay, fine, my gardener can't do it, but still, what, can I do it? So you might say, well, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm just going to go like this and pull out some weeds, you know. But at the end of the day, if you did the job, and if it actually was effective, it still might be prohibited. So the answer is, again, I don't know the first thing about gardening. Okay, we have a few trees in our backyard right now, where we're living right now, but I don't know anything about it. So, yeah, exactly right. You got that. But again, for the
women to do.
So it's like this. Okay, so basically what they say is the following.
Otherwise, you will end up with weeds overrunning the whole garden.
Okay. So the principle is that, as the Chazon Ish and a number of others write, they say that as long as your purpose is to preserve the garden and not to make the trees or the grass grow better, okay, if that's the situation, then you might be allowed in certain situations to actually pull the weeds during Shemitah. Okay, that's the principle. Again, the practical point of how to apply it, we'll get to in a second. But the principle is basically what we said before. If it's such, the situation is such that if you don't pull out the weeds, then your garden is going to be ruined, okay, it's going to be ruined. So then the halacha is that you'd be allowed to do that in order to preserve the garden the way it is now. But if the only way of doing it, the only point of doing it is so that when you pull out the weeds, the garden is going to grow better. Okay, meaning you can manage without, you know, with the weeds there for a year. Let's say it depends on where, you know, what the garden is and whatever. But let's say you can manage with the weeds. But if the weeds are there, it's not going to grow well. And you pull out the weeds, it's going to grow better. So that's going to certainly be a problem. Okay, that's definitely awesome. So now let's just get some of the practical points of that, and then more than that, we'll probably have to speak to the gardeners.
So if the weeds are actually strangling some plant, then you can get rid of
correct.
Them so it doesn't
for sure.
Them.
Correct. Correct.
Because you can't just pull them out for the sake of the thing.
Correct. Correct. That's basically the point. Okay. Now, what they say here is fine. There's another point, by the way, also. There's another interesting machloket. But they say, what happens? Again, I don't know how often this applies. I can't tell you. Maybe you can tell me, or you can ask Daniel Hyman or whoever your other gardener is. Who's it?
We are our own.
You are? Okay, fine. So, you tell me. I don't know.
We're not very good at it.
But you must have figured out something. You must have looked into something, right? What happens in the following case? Let's say that for the year itself, your garden will be a bit not in such good shape. Okay, I mean for that year, the year of Shemitah, it's going to be a mess. And I don't know. I won't say it's going to be ruined. But basically, it's a lost cause. But if you can redo the garden the next year, so everything will come back to the way that it was before. Is that a problem? You're standing there for the year of Shemitah, it's ruined. But if you can bring it back the year afterwards, so that's a machlokas, whether you can do that or not.
What about the financial cost?
That's also a question. Okay? Meaning if that's a situation where it's a lot of money to redo the garden the next year, so then the halacha is that it's permissible to do whatever you need to do during Shemitah to preserve it. But if it's something, again, and I can't tell you, so you need to tell me, or you need to the garden needs to say, if it's something which is not that expensive to redo, meaning let's say it gets ruined over the Shemitah year, but the next year with not that much money, you can basically get it back to what it was the year before. So that's, again, some poskim will say that you have to avoid doing whatever you're doing during Shemitah. And others will say, well, no, as long as it's ruined during Shemitah, that counts as being ruined, and therefore, in order to preserve the garden during Shemitah, the whole purpose of the garden is to look nice. If that purpose of looking nice is not existent during Shemitah, because you didn't do anything to it, so then maybe it's permissible. Okay, that's also a machlokas, what the halacha is in that situation. Again, it's hard to give a definitive answer to that question.
I watched in the Senior Citizen Center quite a few years ago, and there was a garden there. And what they did there was, instead of having the garden come every month, mm-hmm. which is what he did normally,
right.
he would come every like 2 or 3 months.
Okay, for sure.
So he did the same kind of thing
right.
when he came,
right.
but it was only done like...
Okay, so that could be a good solution. Again, it depends on the garden, it depends on what they're growing in the garden. In this situation, just to give you some of the practical points. Okay, I understand. So let's give it a couple practical points. Now, mowing the lawn, that part of it, Rev. Daniel spoke about last week. Okay, so I'm not going into that again now. Basically, the halacha when it comes to mowing the lawn is that it may not, according to Rev. Ramon and some others, it may not be a problem to mow the lawn on a regular basis. But it depends on how far in the grass is already grown. Okay, it's the same point. Meaning, if the grass has grown in far enough that when you mow the lawn, it's not going to cause the grass to grow more. It'll simply just be like, cutting the grass so that it stays at a normal, growth, normal height. So then many post them hold that's permissible. Rev. Ramon says that's permissible even the regular amount of times that you usually mow your lawn. Others say, maybe you have to do it less than normal. But he says it's fine. Why is that? Because he says that it actually is a better preserver if you mow the lawn more than if you mow it less. He says if you mow it less, this is what he was told by, some of the agricultural people, if you mow the lawn less, then every time you mow it, it's going to actually enhance the growth. Rather than just preserve, just giving it, just cutting it. Which again, it depends on the grass, it depends on where. I can't tell you that, you have to talk to a gardener. But it's, again, from what it seems, that's a possibility, you have to be careful. So therefore, it could be that if you're going to mow the lawn, you can mow the lawn the same amount of times, as long as the grass is already filled in to a sufficient degree. Right. That's for sure what Ramon says. Ramon for sure says that. Otherwise, again, I don't disagree, but that's for sure what he says. And therefore, basically, you'd have to say that as long as the grass is fully grown before the Shemitah year starts, which again, you have to put in the grass a few moments beforehand to make sure whatever, you're going to mow it a few times first. But once it's gotten to the point that it's basically stable, so then it could be it's better to mow the lawn on a regular basis. And that keeps it short, but it doesn't cause it to grow more. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's the idea of mowing the lawn, which I think Rav Daniel spoke about last week. When it comes to weeding, so the halacha is, again, it's mutter to weed when necessary. If you had to guess which type of weeding would be better, which one would you think is better? The two types we talked about, with the roots or without the roots, what would you guess? Meaning to uproot the roots with the weeding, or to just cut the weeds on the top without taking out the roots? What would you guess would be the lesser problematic way of doing it? If you had to guess, what would you think?
Except
it's counterintuitive. Okay, so
because eventually you
need
to
mow
garden. Is it
better to poison the weeds instead? Oh, so that's another point. Very good. Yeah, very good. Excellent. Okay,
we're getting there.
Okay. I didn't want to get to poisoning right away. It's already not such a nice topic, But we'll get to that in a second. When it comes to just getting rid of the weeds, so basically the way that Rav Ramon says, again, it's not repeated by everybody, but I think this is already more accepted. That if the choice is between uprooting the weeds with the roots and or the choice is between just cutting the tops of the weeds without the roots, so basically what he says is that it's better to remove them without the roots. Why is that? Because the idea is that it's a lesser agriculturally effective method of causing the plants or the grass to grow if you uproot them without the roots. If the roots are still there, you haven't accomplished as much as you would have if you pulled it out.
Except there you're promoting growth of the weeds.
Right. So promoting growth of weeds is not a problem because the weeds are not growing. That's not
part of
it. Exactly. They're not wanted. Okay. They're unwanted guests. So even though you're right.
Weeds as much as we want.
Right.
We don't want them.
Right. So that's basically the. Yeah. That's what most people say here. If it's not going to help at all, meaning if it's not going to suffice to just cut them without the weeds to do kisuach, so then, and the plants are going to suffer significant damage, or the grass is going to suffer significant damage, so then the halacha is you can remove it even by nikush, even by cutting out the weeds with the roots. Okay? That's what the Chazon Ish says, and he quotes it here. And again, the idea is that, as we said before, as long as it's going to ruin the field, then there's room to be more lenient. And again, keep in mind also, these are all rabbinic malachas. This is not Tzaraos. Okay, this is all rabbinic. All these malachas are darabanan, and therefore, that's the way to do it. Now, before we finish up on that topic, so again, it's very, very important to mention, there are other methods of getting rid of weeds as well. Okay, what are they? So, the other methods of doing so are basically spraying, okay, poison, you know, whatever they call it, pesticide or poison, whatever it is to kill the weeds, so that... that might be actually even a better one. What's the idea there? So basically, there anything
better.
That was it?
It is better.
Yeah. Well, why is it better? Because there you're not cutting the weeds at all. Okay, meaning cutting the weeds, you're either indirectly or directly doing something which is related to the ground. Okay, you cut some part of the ground in a way which is agriculturally somewhat helpful. Okay. What you do by spraying those, you just kill the weeds. Okay, you don't do anything you don't touch the ground. So you just spray, you kill, whatever. So that's even less removed from the real question of weeding in the Mishnah and the Gemara. So in that case, basically, again, either to spray the weeds to kill them if they already exist, or to spray before they even grow in the first place. Okay, that's even better, because there's nothing there to begin with. If you can get them before they even start, then that's even a better possibility. So that's basically what they... So if they're already dead, then it's
whether you should turn the soil.
Right, so that's the only question. I mean, in terms of pulling them out, then it might be okay to pull them out once they're dead, because it's not really attached anymore, halachically. But the question is, right. So the question is, when you take them out, if that, you know, that may be more of a problem of doing something with the soil. So there, again, I didn't see it directly here, but it stands to reason in that case that it's better to leave them, to kill them, leave them where they are. Okay. Again, if I see anything more about that, I'll let you know. I didn't see exactly discussed here, but that's what I would guess. I'll have to take a look again. So that's what they suggest. By the way, this also applies not just to ruining the garden, but also, I think we mentioned this at some point previously about if there's, you know, danger, let's say snakes or something like that, which in Yavidim there used to be a question of snakes. I think today it's not as much of a problem. But if, you know, for whatever reason you have experience or whatever, there's a question about anything like that, not just snakes, anything, that it might be, you know, harmful in any way, then it's certainly permissible also to get rid of the weeds for just because of that reason, even if it has nothing to do with ruining the garden. Okay, that's, again, that's not enhancing the growth. That's simply doing so to eliminate a different, you know, unwanted, exactly. Right. So that's going to be okay. He puts out here, by the way, that that according to the Chazon Ish, if you spray, that's not even considered malacha at all. You know, the Chazon Ish held that wasn't even considered in the category of weeding. Rav Cook felt that it was in the category of weeding. He thought it was okay, based on what we discussed, if it's going to ruin, you know, if it's necessary. But the Chazon Ish says if you spray, it's not even considered to be, you know, weeding at all. It's totally not included in the same category. Okay, so that's why, you know, many posts can say that if it's possible to spray in order to kill the weeds, that's better than to do, you know, than to either to do kisuach or nikush, as mentioned before, of cutting the weeds or uprooting them. Okay, the bottom line here also is that the best thing to do is take care of as much of this as possible before Shemitah begins. And this again is where you need the help of a gardener or an expert, you know, a garden owner, if you know what you're doing. Okay, whatever it is though. So that's actually very important, because anything you can do now during, let's say, the next 2 months to get rid of the weed problem is strongly, strongly recommended, because that means that whatever you do now, the less you'll have to do during the year. Again, depending on how you do it, I'm not the expert. I think that some gardens, at least what I saw quoted here, many gardens, if you do enough weed you know, wheat care before Shemitah. You don't have to do anything during Shemitah year. Yeah, it'll get a little overgrown, but it's not going to ruin anything. Again, that's not always the case, I'm sure. It depends on the specific garden, but you know, you definitely have a better chance of getting through the year like this. And then, at the very least, what you've done is that you've prevented, you know, having to weed until, let's say, halfway through the year or two-thirds of the way through the year, as opposed to 3 months into the year, if you've done your proper weed care from beforehand. Okay. That's what I've seen. Any other comments on your own experience or questions that I can answer?
Weeding is seasonal. Weeding has two things. When you just put in a garden, you get a fortunate.
Right.
So anybody putting in a garden now. And the second thing is that seasonal. You get them in the winter. Now you probably don't have many weeds at all.
So the thing is, the question is if you spray, right, so the question is if you spray things now, so then, you know, will that help you in the winter?
No.
It doesn't help? So again, I'm not the gardener, so I can't say.
Because there's nothing here. To spray.
Some of them are definitely seasonal. But, you know, like when they grow, they flourish.
They flourish and take over.
I remember one time looking at when we eventually followed Daniel would come and cut the grass. And I was like, the dogs were hidden in the weeds. Well, she had been away a lot, and so we hadn't been taking the weeds out. And I was like,
that's our garden.
It was like the weeds were hiding in the toes of the dog.
Come visit our garden. That's what our garden looks like. But our garden has a few trees also, so there's only certain spots. But the spots that are weeds, they're like up to here, you know?
Right.
So, okay, before we move, we'll get it taken care of. For now. Okay, so I guess if that's the case, again, I'm not a gardener, unfortunately. All I can see is what it says in books here. But they seem to think here that just reading what Ramon says. Again, I can't vouch for this, but he said that the is preferable, however, to instead use sprays that prevent weeds from growing or that kill them once they have grown. This spraying should be done before the Shemitah year begins, because generally speaking, a single year without regular weeding is not sufficient time for a serious weed problem to develop. Now again, he doesn't mean that weeds are not going to grow tall. That's not what he means. What he means is that the weeds are not going to ruin the rest of the plants or the grass in the field. So that's the question you have to ask yourself. If you're right, then you would agree that it's permissible to get rid of them during the year if it's going to ruin the garden otherwise in a way which is, you know, causing significant damage. But if not, even though they grow tall, but everything else in the garden will be okay if you wait, so then that's probably just that it doesn't look so nice. You know, that's a little bit less of a heter to allow it. Okay. Again, you know, there may still be room to allow it in that case. According to the Chazon, she still says maybe it's okay because it's not, if you spray it, it's not considered weeding at all. But the bottom line is that if you don't have to get yourself into a question, then it's better to avoid whatever you can. Okay? And the smaller amount, the better. That's the rule of thumb here. Okay. That's the story with weeds. Let's talk a little bit about watering, and then we'll do everything else, all the other stuff next week. So when it comes to watering, watering is an interesting question. Can you go a whole year without watering a garden?
Can you go the whole
year? A whole year without watering a garden?
Not in Israel.
Not in Israel. That's correct. Correct.
You can just die if you don't water them every day.
Right.
If you live in London.
If where?
If you live in England, I guess.
Yeah, there you probably don't have to water anything, right? It's more water, than more rain than you might want. Right? It's always flooding. Okay. So,
which is interesting, because how do they then mix water?
Where? Here?
Yeah.
It's a good question. They had a lot of irrigation. I mean, they had, you know, certain places where they had, you know, big, you know, burrows, you know, pits or trenches that fill up with water. And then they open up the soil and dig holes or pipes or whatever so that the water from those big areas can move into the fields. They were very advanced when it came to those kinds of systems. Now, if you take any of the tours, like the Second Temple tours or whatever, in Yerushalayim, they could show you some of these advanced water systems that had in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is not next to an ocean, and it's not much water there, you know, but they found ways to retain a lot of the water and get it to use ramps to go into here and there. It's really fascinating what they managed to do. You know, I think they were very primitive, but they really, you know, they had they found ways, you know.
Even the
sun. Yeah. Amazing, right? Yeah. So it's clear, basically, that you're allowed, even though, again, rabbinically hashkaya, watering, is one of the forbidden, you know, rabbinically forbidden melachos during Shemitah. However, it's clear that you cannot go a whole year in this country without watering. So it's clear in this case that, again, the rules is going to apply to some degree, that anything which is, at the very least, anything which is necessary in order to preserve the garden or the tree or whatever is permissible to water. Anything which is going to help it grow better is a question. Okay, what do I mean? So here is an interesting point. Okay, let's put it this way. Okay, some poskim say there's different opinions about how much you can water during Shemitah. Okay, the sources here already go back to the Mishnah. There's a debate in the Mishnah about exactly how much you can water during Shemitah. In the Achronim, they talk about this. Interestingly enough, the Mishnah talks about it in Moed Katan. He's actually talking about watering during Shemitah and also watering during Chol Hamoed. Okay, there's a big question whether you can water or do things in a garden on Chol Hamoed. And the rules are actually pretty similar from Chol Hamoed to Shemitah, interestingly enough. So there are some interesting opinions that hold that watering is not the same as the other malachas, meaning that as opposed to other cases such as the ones we just mentioned, where you can only do what's necessary to preserve, for watering they feel because watering is so essential that maybe watering is permissible even above and beyond what's absolutely necessary, and you can actually water as much as you need. Now, this doesn't mean that you're allowed to water when it's not necessary, but it means, according to this more lenient opinion, that when it is necessary, you can water as much as necessary. Okay, that's an opinion in the Achronim, and this makes its way down into the modern poskim. Again, I saw it in a few places here, in the name of Rav Nissim Karelitz, who's one of the big Av Batei Din in Bnei Brak. Okay, big posik in the Hardol. I think it was the Chazon Ish's, I think it was his nephew, maybe, of Karelitz. So he's very, very lenient about this. And he basically says that that it's permissible in a situation where, again, as long as it's necessary, meaning it's not when it's raining. Okay, if it's during the rainy season and it's raining plentifully, which hopefully it will next year, if it's raining a lot, then if you don't need to water, then don't water. Okay, and I don't think anybody would, because you're going to ruin your garden if you try to water more than it's already raining from rain. But when it's not raining, meaning during the summer months or the spring months or even in the winter when it's not raining, so in that situation, good guard dog. More than one? There's two, I see. So in that situation, where it's necessary, so then basically Rav Karelitz says that you can water as much as necessary. If you water your plants or your grass whatever 3 times a week, then he says you can water your grass 3 times a week. Okay, if you water twice a week, you can water twice a week. If you water for 3 hours every time, you can water for 3 hours every time. Okay, that's what Rav Karelitz says. Okay, he says basically that based on the Chazon Ish, but basically what he says is that watering is not included in the other malachas that we say is only minimally allowed in order to preserve. He says watering is different. Okay, that's opinion number one. The more machmir opinion is quoted by other poskim as saying that watering is really the same as some of the other things. Okay, basically. What some of the other poskim, I think it's Rav Yashiv holds this way, and a few others, I think it's Rav Yashiv, basically they say that, no, watering is the same as anything else, meaning that you're allowed to water when necessary, but you can't water more than necessary. What does that mean practically? What it means is that, again, if by not watering you're going to cause your grass to get ruined, okay, if your grass gets to the point that it's already turning yellow, or, drying up, or a tree, whatever it is, it's getting to the point that it's going to get ruined. So you're allowed to water before it gets to that point. So you don't have to wait till your grass gets yellow in order to water it. Okay, but what it means is that you have to water the minimal amount that you can water so that it doesn't get to that point. That's the second more machmir opinion. How much is that? So that depends on how much grass you have, where, what time of year. You can't give it one answer. One thing fits all. Some people some people say maybe it's once a week. Twice a week. It depends on a lot of factors. You have to ask your gardener or decide on your own what that point is. But whatever it is, that's the rule according to the more machmir opinion that you'd be allowed to do as much as when necessary. To water for if you usually water for 2 hours, you water for 1 hour. If it's twice a week, usually then you do it once a week. And then you have to figure out how much can it get by with and still be maintained and not growing and yet not get ruined. Okay, that's the basic approach according to the second approach is more machmir. Rav Rimon has a third approach. Rav Rimon has an in-between approach. What does he say? And we'll see in a minute how this plays itself out practically. Rav Rimon says, well, maybe we should be machmir and follow the approach that you shouldn't water whenever you need, okay, because that's a big leniency. He says you should only water when necessary. But he says when you water when necessary, once your water is already turned on, you can water for however long you want. I mean, let's say that you only need to water once a week. Okay, usually you water twice a week. During Shemitah, you can get by with watering once a week, and still you'll be okay. It won't be great, but you'll be okay. Your grass won't die. Fine. Rav Mon says if you're going to water once a week, and you usually water for an hour, let's say, for example, you don't have to water for half an hour. You can water for the full hour. And maybe even longer than an hour. Why? Because once you already turned on the water, you've done the first part of the malacha. When you turned on the water and started watering the garden, that's permissible. Once you're already starting as a permissible action, you can continue as long as you want. So he would say, if you usually water for an hour, you can water for an hour, maybe even for an hour and a half. That's the opinion of Rav Rimon. And he says this is especially true Especially true if you're talking about sprinklers rather than a hose. Why is that? Take a guess. Why do you think a sprinkler would be less of a problem than a hose? Just think about the way that it works and how much action, you know, is necessary to make it happen. Yeah, it's automatic. Okay, meaning a hose, you turn on a hose, and then you have to take the hose and walk around your garden. Okay, that's very direct. So there already, it could be that there's more reason to be machmir and say that, you know, water as minimally as possible, and however, you know, little you can get away with. But what Rav Rimon says is that when it comes to
so it's actually better to put in the drip section.
Putting what?
To put in the drip irrigation, like for plants.
So again, I'm not so up on exactly what that means. But, you mean, meaning, how does it, just describe how it works. What are you doing exactly?
Okay, at the moment, for example, we take a hose to the front garden and water all the trees that are in the front garden.
Okay.
Separately.
Okay.
But the trees that are in the back garden, we have a hose that's got like these little chicken pin in it. And we just turn the tap on, and
right.
That water drips onto those trees.
Oh, I got you. Okay, I understand. I mean, it's not a sprinkler, but it's hoses that are already next to each tree.
Right.
Okay, so I'm talking about fine. I just didn't know the name for it. What's it called again? Drip system. Okay, fine. That's right. I knew the idea. I just didn't know the names.
Right.
That's my ignorance. My amoratus when it comes to this. That's not all right, because we're going to teach you about, you know what you're talking about. But I didn't know the name. But so that's the same thing as a sprinkler. Meaning there also, what's happening is that all you did is turn on the water, but you did not directly actually water the plants or the grass. So that would be the same thing. So there also, basically, Rav Rimon says, his Psak Halacha, and you know, he says this is not clear, meaning it's debatable, but the bottom line is because it's done that way, it's called a groma. Groma means indirect. So if it's done indirectly, and to begin with, there are some people that say that you can water as much as you need. And to begin with, we said before that the whole idea of watering to begin with is only rabbinic, it's derabbanan, it's not d'oraisa. So therefore, Rav Rimon feels that there's room to allow using the sprinkler. And again, you know, putting on the sprinkler, not, let's say, twice a week, but once a week. But every time that you put it on, okay, you can let it stand for as long as you want. Okay? That's what Rav Rimon feels is permissible. So again, there are others that disagree that it will not here. But certainly, you know, when you're dealing with a sprinkler or a drip system, it makes sense to say that there's room to be lenient about that. He also suggests here that if it's possible to do it by computer system, that's even better. You know, as opposed to turning it on yourself, putting on a timer of a computer where you time it, that every week it goes on at 9, you know, to 8 o'clock at night or something like that, that's even more preferable than turning it on yourself. Because, again, the less direct method of watering that you can do, the better off you are. Okay, I mean, the lesser halachically problematic it's going to be. That's essentially what he's saying. Again, there's a few other factors I didn't mention, but that's basically the main point. So again, if you ask me, there's room. Certainly, Rav Rimon's opinion is, you know, I would say you could follow Rav Rimon's opinion here. If you want to be more machmir, because it's your hate, that's great. But there's definitely room to follow this. Now, that's when it comes to general watering during the year. The other question that, I think we mentioned this already a few weeks ago, but we'll just mention it again now, and then if you have questions after that, we'll take some questions, is it better or even allowed to pre-program a computer watering system from before Shemitah begins? Okay, I think we mentioned this the very first week, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
You take your, you'll see you have a computer watering timer system, and you pre-program it, let's say, in the middle of September, or a few days before Rosh Hashanah. And you say, however long I'm going to pre-program it for, it's going to go on every week, twice a week, for an hour each, which is the regular amount that you usually water your garden, let's say. Is that okay? So we mentioned at the time, it's a machlokes, that some hold that it's okay, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach holds that that's okay, Rav Yashiv, I think holds that, or it's the other way around. I'm sorry. I think Shlomo Zalman holds that it's not okay, and Rav Yashiv holds that that maybe it is okay. What's the basis? I think we mentioned this previously, that the idea is that maybe, you know, the land has a mitzvah to rest on its own. And aside from you doing anything, the land itself has to rest. So even if you pre-program the watering system from beforehand, if the land is getting watered, it's still a problem. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman says. Rav Yashiv says no. That doesn't. We don't hold to that whole, you know. That whole idea of the land, you know, having an independent prohibition to rest. And number two, Rav Rimon points out that even if that is the case, there is an independent, the land itself has to rest. Maybe that's only when it comes to biblical labors. When it comes to rabbinic things, such as watering, maybe that's also okay. So the bottom line is Rav Rimon holds, and Halacha L'maisa, other post-Maisa also permit this, they permit setting the computer the year before Shemitah and having the ground watered as normal. Now, again, I don't know if you'd want to do that all winter, because in the rainy season that's going to be too much, but at least for the first few months, that may be a valid solution to even watering normally. Okay.
But then could you pre-program it again? No.
Oh, so if it's stopped.
So so for the winter, because for the winter you change your programming.
Okay, so that's the question. So once the pre-program turns off, either on purpose or by accident, if it gets turned off, the question is, can you reset it again? And then the answer is that it's based on what we said before. Okay, meaning once it's already, the pre-program is already off, you have to go back to the other rules, which means that you certainly cannot set it to be the regular amount that you normally water it, according to most opinions. Okay, but what you could do, again, based on what we just said before, is you could pre-program it to go, let's say, once a week instead of twice a week. But when it goes on, it can go on for at least a full hour, maybe even longer than that. That's what Ramon said. Again, others disagree, but we said that's a good sheet to follow. There's a lot of reasons why you could be lenient based on that. So that would still be permissible. He suggests here also, even if you're going to do that, it's better to reset it with a shinoi, okay, in an unusual manner. I mean, not to reset it in the normal way. If there's some way of, you know, resetting it in an unusual way, like, you know, on Shabbos, you flick a light like this with your elbow instead of with your hands. So anything like that, you know, he suggests maybe is preferable if possible to do. He says, He says also if only the faucet was closed, but the timer's still on, then there's even more between it. Okay, I mean, the timer didn't switch, but you just turn off the faucet so the water's not coming out. So there he says, in that case, if you're just going to turn back on the faucet, there's even more room to be lenient in that situation. But again, in all these cases, it seems like l'chatchila, the best thing to do is to follow whatever rules you're going to follow for the regular Shemitah year, which again means if you're going to follow the more machmir position, it means, you know, only once a week instead of twice a week, only for half an hour as opposed to an hour. If you follow every moan, that means the middle position, you do it once a week instead of twice a week, but you can still do it for an hour, like you usually do, or even longer than that. If you follow the most lenient position of Karelitz, you can any time that it needs water, you can do it twice a week for an hour. Meaning any time during, you know, the seasons where it's not raining.
Basically, there's an opinion for everyone.
Correct, right. So again, if you ask me, I think Rabbi Moe's opinion is a good one to follow. It's a nice middle opinion. There's a lot of reasons you can follow it. And also, he's somebody that I rely on for, you know, my Piskei Halacha when it comes to Shemitah. But even according to the Maracha position, you know, there's what to talk about. And maybe even they would say, but if you do it by computer, there's more room to be, you know, more room to be lenient. But again, L'chachilu should follow based on what we said. Okay. That's basically the story in terms of watering. Any questions about the watering part of it? No.
What about warming pots?
Oh, okay. So that, I think we're going to save that for next week. I mean, I should do it now. I think we're going to save it for next week. What we need to speak about first in terms of that is whether it's permissible to plant a plant. Say it. This is to plant a plant inside in the first place. Meaning it could be that the rules of Shemitah of planting don't apply to planting, you know, potted plants inside your house. And if that's the case, then even if we say that it's a problem, there may be more room to say that you're allowed to water them. Okay? That's, I want to start with that first, before getting to the question of watering. But let's just say that it's a question. Okay? Meaning there's a bit of a debate about whether you can plant a plant inside the house, which we'll have to speak about. But when it comes to watering, there may be even more room to be lenient. We'll have to speak about it. Okay? So we'll get to that next week. Also next week, hopefully, we'll speak about other aspects of water. Not watering, but let's say air conditioning, exhaust, whatever, pipes where the water from the residue of the air conditioner drips down onto your garden. Let's say you hang out wet laundry or the kitchen sink. You know, water drips out. Let's say you sponge on your floor and you sponge the water right onto your garden. Is that okay? Any of these kinds of cases where your goal is not necessarily to water the plants, but yet the water goes into your garden anyway, you know, either indirectly or unintentionally, what's the halacha in those situations? Okay, those are very, very interesting and very practical. Yeah. Okay, so that, I guess I haven't gotten to that stage yet with my kids, but the same thing, let's say you have a pool, okay? Yeah. So, you know, right, so we're just a kiddie pool, that's, I guess, my case more, but that, any kind of thing like that, you know, you did it because they want to have a good time and they're hot. But yet, when you pour out the water, where's it going to go? Okay, you can't carry it from your yard into the street, so you're going to pour it on the grass. Is that okay? So we have to speak about all those cases. Okay, we'll speak about that next week, God willing, those aspects of watering. And then any other aspects of gardening we didn't speak about. We spoke about weeding a little bit about pruning and pesticides and fertilization. I guess we'll get to that next week. And if you have any other questions, let me know during the week. Other gardening questions that I didn't speak about. Please email me and let me know, and I'll make sure to include this. Okay, so flowers. I think did you speak about that last week?
No,
I think
the rose bushes come, because he spoke about pruning with vines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you can't prune. In general, you can cut branches of a tree or a bush or. Okay, that's what he said. But the pruning has a problem with vines because that precipitates growth.
Yeah, yeah.
And then rose bushes would also fall under that category.
Right, so I'll have to do that. They speak about rose bushes as a separate category, so we'll, that one, so I'll mention that also. Okay, very good.